Hodge, even Sebastian. I kept shoving it all down, trying to forget. But it's catching up with me. I'll get help. I'll get better. I promise.
You promise?
I swear on the angel. He ducked his head down, kissed her cheek. The hell with that. I swear on us. Cleary wound her fingers into the sleeve of his t-shirt. Why us? Because there isn't anything I believe in more. He tilted his head to the side. If we were to get married, he began, and he must have felt her tense under him, because he smiled. Don't panic. I'm not proposing on the spot. I was just wondering what you knew about Shadowhunter weddings. No rings, Clary said, brushing her fingers across the back of his neck, where the skin was soft. Just runes. One here, he said, gently touching her arm where the scar was with a fingertip. And another here. He slid his fingertip up her arm, across her collarbone, and down until it rested over her racing heart. The ritual is taken from the Song of Solomon. Set me as a seal upon thine heart, as a seal upon thine arm, for love is strong as death. Ours is stronger than that, Clary whispered, remembering how she had brought him back. And this time, when his eyes darkened, she reached up and drew him down to her mouth. They kissed for a long time, until most of the light had bled out of the room and they were just shadows. Jace didn't move his hands or try to touch her, though, and she sensed he was waiting for permission. She realized she would have to be the one to take it further if she wanted to. And she did want to. He'd admitted something was wrong and that it had nothing to do with her. This was progress. Positive progress. He ought to be rewarded, right? A little grin crooked the edge of her mouth. Who was she kidding? She wanted more on her own behalf. Because he was Jace. Because she loved him. Because he was so gorgeous that sometimes she felt the need to poke him in the arm just to make sure he was real. She did just that.
Ow! He said. What was that for?
Take your shirt off, she whispered. She reached for the hem of it, but he was already there, lifting it over his head and tossing it casually to the floor. He shook his hair out, and she almost expected the bright gold strands to scatter sparks in the darkness of the room. Sit up, she said softly. Her heart was pounding. She didn't usually take the lead in these sort of situations, but he didn't seem to mind. He sat up slowly, pulling her up with him, until they were both sitting among the welter of blankets. She crawled into his lap, straddling his hips. Now they were face to face. She heard him suck his breath in, and he raised his hands, reaching for her shirt. But she pushed them back down again, gently, to his sides, and put her own hands on him instead. She watched her fingers slide over his chest and arms, the swell of his biceps where the black marks twined, the star-shaped mark on his shoulder. She traced her index finger down the line between his pectoral muscles across his flat, washboard stomach. They were both breathing hard when she reached the buckle on his jeans, but he didn't move. Just looked at her with an expression that said, "Whatever you want." Her heart thudding, she dropped her hands to the hem of her own shirt and pulled it off over her head. She wished she'd worn a more exciting bra. This one was plain white cotton, but when she looked up again at Jace's expression, the thought evaporated. His lips were parted, his eyes nearly black. She could see herself reflected in them and knew he didn't care if her bra was white or black or neon green. All he was seeing was her. She reached for his hands then, freeing them, and put them on her waist, as if to say, "You can touch me now?" He tilted his head up. Her mouth came down over his, and they were kissing again. But it was fierce instead of languorous, a hot and fast-burning fire. His hands were feverish, and her hair on her body pulling her down so that she lay under him. And as their bare skin slid together, she was acutely conscious that there really was nothing between them but his jeans and her bra and panties. She tangled her hands in his silky, disheveled hair, holding his head as he kissed down her throat. How far are we going? What are we doing? A small part of her brain was asking, but the rest of her mind was screaming at that small part to shut up. She wanted to keep touching him, kissing him. She wanted him to hold her and to know that he was real, here with her, and that he would never leave again. His fingers found the clasp of her bra. She tensed. His eyes were large and luminous in the darkness, his smile slow. Is this all right? She nodded. Her breath was coming fast. No one in her entire life had ever seen her topless. No boy, anyway. As if sensing her nervousness, he cupped her face gently with one hand, his lips teasing hers, brushing gently across them until her whole body felt as if it were shattering with tension. His long-fingered, calloused right hand stroked along her cheek, then her shoulder, soothing her. She was still on edge, though, waiting for his other hand to move back to her bra clasp, to touch her again. But he seemed to be reaching for something behind him. What was he doing? Clary thought suddenly of what Isabel had said about being careful. Oh, she thought. She stiffened a little and drew back. Jace, I'm not sure I... There was a flash of silver in the darkness, and something cold and sharp lanced across the side of her arm. All she felt for a moment was surprise, then pain. She drew her hands back, blinking, and saw a line of dark blood beating on her skin where a shallow cut ran from her elbow to her wrist. Ouch! She said, more in annoyance and surprise than hurt. What? Jace launched himself off her, off the bed, in a single motion. Suddenly, he was standing in the middle of the room, shirtless, his face as white as bone. Hand clasped across her injured arm, Clary started to sit up. Jace, what? She broke off. In his left hand, he was clutching a knife, the silver-handled knife she had seen in the box that had belonged to his father. There was a thin smear of blood across the blade. She looked down at her hand, and then up again at him. I don't understand. He opened his hand, and the knife clattered to the floor. For a moment, he looked as if he might run again, the way he had outside the bar. Then he sank to the ground and put his head in his hands.
I like her, said Camille, as the door shut behind Isabel. She rather reminds me of me. Simon turned to look at her. It was very dim in the sanctuary, but he could see her clearly, her back against the pillar, her hands bound behind her. There was a shadow hunter guard stationed near the doors to the institute, but either he hadn't heard Camille, or he wasn't interested. Simon moved a bit closer to Camille. The bonds that constrained her held an odd fascination for him. Blessed metal. The chain seemed to gleam softly against her pale skin, and he thought he could see a few threads of blood seeping around the manacles at her wrists. She isn't at all like you. So you think? Camille tilted her head to the side. Her blonde hair seemed artfully arranged around her face, though he knew she couldn't have touched it. You love them so, she said. Your shadow hunter friends, as the falcon loves the master who binds and blinds it. Things aren't like that, Simon said. Shadowhunters and downworlders aren't enemies. You can't even go with them into their home, she said. You are shut out, yet so eager to serve them. You would stand on their side against your own kind. I have no kind, Simon said. I'm not one of them, but I'm not one of you either. And I'd rather be like them than like you. You are one of us. She moved impatiently, rattling her chains, and gave a little gasp of pain. There's something I didn't say to you, back at the bank. But it is true. She smiled tightly through the pain. I can smell human blood on you. You fed recently. On a mundane. Simon felt something inside him jump. It was wonderful, wasn't it? Her red lips curved. The first time since you've been a vampire that you haven't been hungry. No, Simon said. You're lying. There was a conviction in her voice. They tried to make us fight against our natures, the Nephilim. They will accept us only if we pretend to be other than we are. Not hunters, not predators. Your friends will never accept what you are. Only what you pretend to be. What you do for them, they would never do for you. I don't know why you're bothering with this, said Simon. What's done is done. I'm not going to let you go. I made my choice. I don't want what you offered me. Maybe not now, Camille said softly. But you will. You will. The Shadowhunter guard stepped back as the door opened, and Maris came into the room. She was followed by two figures immediately familiar to Simon. Isabel's brother, Alec, and his boyfriend, the warlock Magnus Bane. Alec was dressed in a sober black suit. Magnus, to Simon's surprise, was similarly dressed, with the addition of a long white silk scarf with tasseled ends and a pair of white gloves. His hair stood up like it always did, but for a change, he was devoid of glitter. Camille, upon seeing him, went very still. Magnus didn't seem to see her yet. He was listening to Maris, who was saying, rather awkwardly, that it was good of them to come so quickly. We didn't really expect you until tomorrow, at the earliest. Alec made a muffled noise of annoyance and gazed off into space. He seemed as if he wasn't happy to be there at all. Beyond that, Simon thought, he looked much the same as he always had. Same black hair, same steady blue eyes, although there was something more relaxed about him than there had been before, as if he'd grown into himself somehow. Fortunately, there is a portal located near the Vienna Opera House, Magnus said, flinging his scarf back over his shoulder with a grand gesture. The moment we got your message, we hurried to be here. Well, I still don't see what any of this has to do with us, Alec said. So you caught a vampire who was up to something nasty. Aren't they always? Simon felt his stomach turn. He looked towards Camille to see if she was laughing at him, but her gaze was fixed on Magnus. Alec, looking at Simon for the first time, flushed. It was always very noticeable on him because his skin was so pale. Sorry, Simon, I didn't mean you. You're different. Would you think that if you'd seen me last night, feeding on a 14-year-old girl? Simon thought. He didn't say that, though. Just dropped Alec a nod. She is of interest in our current investigation into the death of three Shadowhunters, said Maris. We need information from her, and she will only talk to Magnus Bane. Really? Alec looked at Camille with puzzled interest. Only to Magnus. Magnus followed his gaze, and for the first time, or so it seemed to Simon, looked at Camille directly. Something crackled between them, a sort of energy. Magnus's mouth quirked up at the corners into a wistful smile. Yes, Maris said, a look of puzzlement passing over her face as she caught the look between the warlock and the vampire. That is, if Magnus is willing. I am, Magnus said, drawing off his gloves. I'll talk to Camille for you. Camille? Alec looked at Magnus with his eyebrows raised. You know her then, or she knows you? We know each other, Magnus shrugged, very slightly, as if to say, what can you do? Once upon a time, she was my girlfriend. Chapter 13. Girl Found Dead. Your girlfriend? Alec looked astonished. So did Maris. Simon couldn't say he was unastonished himself. You dated a vampire. A girl vampire. It was 130 years ago, said Magnus. I haven't seen her since. Why didn't you tell me? Alec demanded. Magnus sighed. Alexander, I've been alive for hundreds of years. I've been with men, been with women, with fairies and warlocks and vampires, and even a djinn or two. He looked sideways at Maris, who looked mildly horrified. Too much information? It's all right, she said, though she sounded a little wan. I have to discuss something with Kadir for a moment. I'll be back. She stepped aside, joining Kadir. They disappeared through the doorway. Simon took a few steps back as well, pretending to study one of the stained glass windows intently, but his vampire hearing was good enough that he could hear everything Magnus and Alec were saying to each other, whether he wanted to or not. Camille, he knew, could hear it too. She had her head cocked to the side as she listened, her eyes heavy-lidded and thoughtful.
How many other people? Alec asked. Roughly.
Magnus shook his head. I can't count. It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is how I feel about you.
More than 100?
Alec asked. Magnus looked blank.
200?
I can't believe we're having this conversation now, Magnus said, to no one in particular. Simon was inclined to agree, and wished they weren't having it in front of him.
Why so many?
Alec's blue eyes were very bright in the dimness. Simon couldn't tell if he was angry. He didn't sound angry, just very intense. But Alec was a shut-down person, and perhaps this was as angry as he ever got.
Do you get bored with people fast?
I live forever, Magnus said quietly, but not everyone does. Alec looked as if someone had hit him.
So you just stay with them as long as they live, and then you find someone else?
Magnus didn't say anything. He looked at Alec, his eyes shining like a cat's. Would you rather I spend all of eternity alone? Alec's mouth twitched.
I'm going to find Isabel, he said,
and without another word, he turned and walked back into the Institute. Magnus watched him go with sad eyes. Not a human sort of sad, Simon thought. His eyes seemed to contain the sadness of great ages, as if the sharp edges of human sadness had been worn down to something softer by the passing of years, the way seawater wore away the sharp edges of glass. As if he could tell Simon was thinking about him, Magnus looked at him sideways. Eavesdropping? Vampire?
I really don't love it when people call me that, Simon said. I have a name.
I suppose I'd better remember it. After all, in 100 or 200 years, it'll be just you and me. Magnus regarded Simon thoughtfully. We'll be all that's left. The thought made Simon feel as if he were in an elevator that had suddenly broken free of its moorings and started plunging toward the ground, 1,000 stories down. The thought had passed through his mind before, of course, but he'd always pushed it away. The thought that he would stay 16 while Clary got older, Jace got older, everyone got older, grew up, had children, and nothing ever changed for him was too enormous and too horrible to contemplate. Being 16 forever sounded good, until you really thought about it. Then it didn't seem like such a great prospect anymore. Magnus's cat eyes were a clear gold green. Staring eternity in the face, he said. Not so much fun, is it? Before Simon could reply, Maris had returned.
Where's Alec?
She asked, looking around in puzzlement.
He went to see Isabel, said Simon before Magnus had to say anything. Very well.
Maris smoothed the front of her jacket down, though it wasn't wrinkled. If you wouldn't mind.
I'll talk to Camille, said Magnus. But I want to do it alone. If you'd like to wait for me in the Institute, I'll join you there when I'm finished.
Maris hesitated.
You know what to ask her?
Magnus's gaze was unwavering.
I know how to talk to her, yes. If she's willing to say anything, she'll say it to me.
Both of them seemed to have forgotten that Simon was there.
Should I go too?
He asked, interrupting the staring contest. Maris looked at him, half distracted.
Oh yes, thank you for your help, Simon, but you're no longer needed. Go home if you like.
Magnus said nothing at all. With a shrug, Simon turned and went toward the door that led him to the vestry and to the exit that would take him outside. At the door he paused and looked back. Maris and Magnus were still talking, though the guard was already holding open the Institute door ready to leave. Only Camille seemed to remember that Simon was there at all. She was smiling at him from her pillar, her lips curved up at the corners, her eyes shining like a promise. Simon went out and closed the door behind him.
It happens every night. Jace was sitting on the floor, his legs drawn up, his hands dangling between his knees. He had put the knife on the bed next to Clary. She kept one hand on it while he talked, more to reassure him than because she needed it to defend herself. All the energy seemed to have drained out of Jace. Even his voice sounded empty and far away while he talked, as if he were speaking to her from a great distance. I dream that you come into my room and we start doing what we were just doing, and then I hurt you. I cut you or strangle or stab you and you die, looking up at me with those green eyes of yours while your life bleeds away between my hands. They're only dreams, Clary said gently.
You just saw that they aren't, said Jace. I was wide awake when I picked up that knife. Clary knew he was right. Are you worried that you're going crazy? He shook his head slowly. Hair fell into his eyes. He pushed it back. His hair had gotten a little too long. He hadn't cut it in a while. And Clary wondered if it was because he couldn't be bothered. How could she not have paid more attention to the shadows under his eyes, the bitten nails, the drawn, exhausted look of him? She had been so concerned about whether he still loved her that she had not thought about anything else. I'm not so worried about that, really, he said. I'm worried about hurting you. I'm worried that whatever poison it is that's eating its way into my dreams will bleed through into my waking life and I'll... His throat seemed to close up. You would never hurt me. I had that knife in my hand, Clary. He looked up at her, and then away. If I hurt you... His voice trailed off. Shadow hunters die young, a lot of the time, he said. We all know that. And you wanted to be a shadow hunter, and I would never stop you because it isn't my job to tell you what to do with your life, especially when I'm taking the same kind of risks. What kind of person would I be if I told you it was all right for me to risk my life, but not for you? So I've thought about what it would be like for me if you died. I bet you've thought about the same thing. I know what it would be like, Clary said, remembering the lake, the sword, and Jace's blood spreading over the sand. He had been dead, and the angel had brought him back. But those had been the worst minutes of her life. I wanted to die, but I knew how disappointed in me you'd have been if I'd just given up. He smiled, the ghost of a smile. And I've thought the same thing. If you died, I wouldn't want to live, but I wouldn't kill myself, because whatever happens after we die, I want to be with you there, and if I kill myself, I know you'd never talk to me again, in any life. So I'd live, and I'd try to make something out of my life until I could be with you again. But if I hurt you, if I was the cause of your death, there's nothing that would keep me from destroying myself. Don't say that. Clary felt chilled to the bone. Jace, you should have told me. I couldn't. His voice was flat, final. Why not? I thought I was Jace Lightwood, he said. I thought it was possible that my upbringing hadn't touched me. But now I wonder if maybe people can't change. Maybe I'll always be Jace Morgenstern, Valentine's son. He raised me for 10 years. And maybe that's a stain that won't ever bleach out. You think this is because of your father? Clary said. And the bit of story that Jace had told her once ran through her head. To love is to destroy. And then she thought how strange it was that she would call Valentine Jace's father, when his blood ran in her veins, not Jace's. But she had never felt about Valentine the way you might feel about a father, and Jace had. And you didn't want me to know? You're everything I want, Jace said. And maybe Jace Lightwood deserves to get everything he wants. But Jace Morgenstern doesn't. Somewhere inside, I must know that. Or I wouldn't be trying to destroy what we have. Clary took a deep breath and let it out slowly. I don't think you are. He raised his head and blinked. What do you mean? You think this is psychological, Clary said, that there's something wrong with you. Well, I don't. I think someone is doing this to you. I don't... Ethuriel sent me dreams, Clary said. Maybe someone is sending you dreams. Ethuriel sent you dreams to try to help you, to guide you to the truth. What's the point of these dreams? They're sick, meaningless, sadistic. Maybe they have a meaning, Clary said. Maybe the meaning just isn't what you think. Or maybe whoever is sending them is trying to hurt you. Who would do that? Someone who doesn't like us very much, said Clary, and pushed away an image of the Seely Queen. Maybe, Jace said softly, looking down at his hands. Sebastian. So he doesn't want to call him Jonathan either, Clary thought. She didn't blame him. It was his own name, too. Sebastian's dead, she said, a little more sharply than she'd intended. And if he had had this sort of power, he would have used it before. Doubt and hope chased each other across Jace's face. You really think someone else could be doing this? Clary's heart beat hard against her ribcage. She wasn't sure. She wanted it so badly to be true. But if it wasn't, she would have gotten Jace's hopes up for nothing. Both their hopes. But then she got the feeling it had been a while since Jace had felt hopeful about anything. I think we should go to the Silent City, she said. The brothers can get into your head and find out if someone's been messing around in there, the way they did with me. Jace opened his mouth and closed it again. When? He said finally. Now, Clary said. I don't want to wait. Do you? He didn't reply. Just got up off the floor and picked up his shirt. He looked at Clary and almost smiled. If we're going to the Silent City, you might want to get dressed. I mean, I appreciate the bra and panties look, but I don't know if the Silent Brothers will. There are only a few of them left, and I don't want them to die of excitement. Clary got up off the bed and threw a pillow at him, mostly out of relief. She reached for her clothes and began to pull her shirt on. Just before it went over her head, she caught sight of the knife lying on the bedspread, gleaming like a fork of silvery flame. Camille, Magnus said, it's been a long time, hasn't it? She smiled. Her skin looked whiter than he recalled, and dark spidery veins were beginning to show beneath its surface. Her hair was still the color of spun silver, and her eyes were still as green as a cat's. She was still beautiful. Looking at her, he was in London again. He saw the gas light and smelled the smoke and dirt and horses, the metallic tang of fog, the flowers and Kew Gardens. He saw a boy with black hair and blue eyes like Alex, a girl with long brown curls and a serious face. In a world where everything went away from him eventually, she was one of the few remaining constants. And then there was Camille. I've missed you, Magnus, she said. No, you haven't. He sat down on the floor of the sanctuary. He could feel the cold of the stone through his clothes. He was glad he had worn the scarf. So, why the message for me? Just stalling for time? No. She leaned forward, the chains rattling. He could almost hear the hissing where the blessed metal touched the skin of her wrists. I have heard things about you, Magnus. I have heard that you are under the wing of the Shadow Hunters these days. I had heard that you have won the love of one of them. That boy you were just talking to, I imagine. But then, your tastes were always diverse. You have been listening to rumors about me, Magnus said. But you could simply have asked me. All these years I was in Brooklyn, not far away at all, and I never heard from you. Never saw you at one of my parties. There has been a wall of ice between us, Camille. I did not build it. Her green eyes widened. I have loved you always. You left me, he said. You made a pet out of me, and then you left me. If love were food, I would have starved on the bones you gave me. He spoke matter-of-factly. It had been a long time. But we had all of eternity, she protested. You must have known I would come back to you. Camille, Magnus spoke with infinite patience. What do you want? Her chest rose and fell quickly. Since she had no need to breathe, Magnus knew this was mainly for effect. I know you have the ear of the Shadow Hunters, she said. I want you to speak to them on my behalf. You want me to cut a deal for you, Magnus translated. She cut her eyes at him. Your diction has always been so regrettably modern. They're saying you killed three Shadow Hunters, said Magnus. Did you? They were Circle members, she said, her lower lip trembling. They had tortured and killed my kind in the past. Is that why you did it? Revenge? When she was silent, Magnus said, You know what they do to those who kill Nephilim, Camille. Her eyes shone. I need you to intercede for me, Magnus. I want immunity. I want the signed promise from the Clave that if I give them information, they will spare my life and set me free. They'll never set you free. Then they'll never know why their colleagues had to die. Had to die? Magnus mused. Interesting wording, Camille. Am I correct that there is more to this than meets the eye? More than blood or revenge? She was silent, looking at him, her chest rising and falling artfully. Everything about her was artful, the fall of her silvery hair, the curve of her throat, even the blood on her wrists. If you want me to speak to them for you, Magnus said, you have to tell me at least some small thing, a show of good faith. She smiled brilliantly. I knew you would speak to them for me, Magnus. I knew the past was not entirely dead for you. Consider it undead, if you like, Magnus said. The truth, Camille? She ran her tongue across her lower lip. You can tell them, she said, that I was under orders when I killed those shadow hunters. It does not disturb me to do it, for they had killed my kin, and their deaths were deserved. But I would not have done it unless requested to do so by someone else, someone much more powerful than myself. Magnus's heart beat a little faster. He didn't like the sound of this. Who? But Camille shook her head. Immunity, Magnus. Camille. They will stake me out in the sun and leave me to die, she said. That is what they do to those who slay Nephilim. Magnus got to his feet. His scarf was dusty from lying on the ground. He looked at the stains mournfully. I'll do what I can, Camille, but I make no promises. You never would, she murmured, her eyes half-lidded. Come here, Magnus. Come close to me. He did not love her, but she was a dream out of the past. So he moved toward her until he was standing close enough to touch her. Remember, she said softly. Remember London, the parties at De Quincey's. Remember Will Herondale? I know you do. That boy of yours, that Lightwood, they even look alike. Do they? Magnus said, as if he had never thought about it. Pretty boys have always been your undoing, she said. But what can some mortal child give you? 10 years, 20, before dissolution begins to claim him. 40 years, 50, before death takes him. I can give you all of eternity. He touched her cheek. It was colder than the floor had been. You could give me the past, he said a little sadly. But Alec is my future. Magnus, she began. The institute door opened, and Maris stood in the doorway, outlined by the witchlight behind her. Beside her was Alec, his arms crossed over his chest. Magnus wondered if Alec had heard any of the conversation between him and Camille through the door. Surely not. Magnus, said Maris Lightwood, have you come to some agreement? Magnus dropped his hand. I'm not sure I'd call it an agreement, he said, turning to Maris. But I do think we have some things to talk about. Dressed, Clary went with Jace to his room, where he packed a small canvas bag with things to bring with him to the Silent City, as if, she thought, he were going to some grim sleepover party. Weapons mostly, a few Seraph blades, his steely, and almost as an afterthought, the silver-handled knife. Its blade now cleaned of blood. He slid on a black leather jacket, and she watched as he zipped it, pulling loose strands of blonde hair free of his collar. When he turned to look at her, slinging his bag across his shoulder,
He smiled faintly, and she saw the slight chip in his front left incisor that she had always thought was endearing, a little flaw in looks that would otherwise be too perfect. Her heart contracted, and for a moment she looked away from him, hardly able to breathe. He held out his hand to her. "Let's go." There was no way to summon the Silent Brothers to come and get them, so Jason Clary took a taxi heading downtown toward Houston and the Marble Cemetery. Clary supposed they could just have portaled into the Bone City. She'd been there before. She knew what it looked like. But Jace said there were rules about that sort of thing, and Clary couldn't shake the feeling that the Silent Brothers might find it rather rude. Jace sat beside her in the back of the taxi, holding one of her hands and tracing patterns on the back of it with his fingers. This was distracting, but not so distracting that she couldn't concentrate while he filled her in on what had been going on with Simon, the story of Jordan, their capture of Camille, and her demand to speak to Magnus. "Simon's all right?" she said worriedly. "I didn't realize. He was in the Institute, and I didn't even see him." "He wasn't in the Institute. He was in the Sanctuary. And he seems to be holding his own. Better than I would have thought for someone who was so recently a mundane." "But the plan sounds dangerous. I mean, Camille, she's absolutely crazy, isn't she?" Jace traced his fingers over her knuckles. "You have to stop thinking of Simon as the mundane boy you used to know. The one who required so much saving. He's almost beyond being harmed now. You haven't seen the mark you gave him in action. I have. Like the wrath of God being visited upon the world. I suppose you should be proud." She shivered. "I don't know. I did it because I had to do it. But it's still a curse. And I didn't know he was going through all this. He didn't say. I knew Isabel and Maya had found out about each other, but I didn't know about Jordan, that he was really Maya's ex, or any of it." "Because you haven't asked. You were too busy worrying about Jace. Not good." "Well," Jace said, "have you been telling him what you're up to? Because it has to go both ways." "No, I haven't really told anyone," Clary said, and filled Jace in on her trip to the Silent City with Luke and Maris, what she had found at the morgue at Beth Israel, and her subsequent discovery of the Church of Talto. "Never heard of it," Jace said. "But Isabel's right. There are all sorts of bizarro demon-worshipping sects out there. Most of them never actually succeed in summoning up a demon. Sounds like this one did." "Do you think the demon we killed was the one they were worshipping? Do you think now they might stop?" Jace shook his head. "That was just a Hydra demon, a sort of guard dog. Besides, her house inclineth unto death, and her paths unto the dead. Sounds like a female demon to me. And it's the cults that worship female demons that often do horrible stuff with babies. They have all sorts of twisted ideas about fertility in infants." He sat back against the seat, half closing his eyes. "I'm sure the conclave will go to the church and check it out, but 20-1, they don't find anything. You killed their guard demon, so the cult's going to clear out and ditch the evidence. We might have to wait until they set up shop again somewhere else." "But," Clary's stomach clenched, "that baby, and the pictures in the book I saw, I think they're trying to make more children like Sebastian." "They can't," said Jace. "They shot up a human baby with demon blood, which is pretty bad, yes. But you get something like Sebastian only if what you're doing is using demon blood on Shadowhunter children. Instead, the baby died." He squeezed her hand lightly, as if for reassurance. "They're not nice people, but I can't imagine they'd try the same thing again, since it didn't work." The taxi came to a screeching halt at the corner of Houston and 2nd Avenue. "Meter's broken," said the cabbie. $10. Jace, who under other circumstances would probably have made a sarcastic remark, tossed the cabbie a 20 and got out of the car, holding the door open for Clary to follow. "You ready?" he asked as they headed toward the iron gate that led to the city. She nodded. I can't say my last trip here was much fun, but yes, I'm ready. She took his hand. As long as we're together, I'm ready for anything. The Silent Brothers were waiting for them in the entryway of the city, almost as if they had been expecting them. Clary recognized Brother Zachariah among the group. They stood in a silent line, blocking Clary and Jace's farther ingress into the city.
Why have you come here, daughter of Valentine and son of the Institute?
Clary wasn't sure which of them was speaking to her inside her head, or if all of them were.
It is unusual for children to enter the Silent City unsupervised.
The appellation, children, stung, though Clary was aware that as far as shadow hunters were concerned, everyone under 18 was a child and subject to different rules. We need your help, Clary said when it became apparent Jace wasn't going to say anything. He was looking from one of the Silent Brothers to the other with a curious listlessness, like someone who had received countless terminal diagnoses from different doctors and now, having reached the end of the line, waited without much hope for a specialist's verdict.
Isn't that your job, helping shadow hunters? And yet we are not servants at your beck and call, nor does every problem fall under our jurisdiction.
But this one does, Clary said firmly. I believe someone is reaching into Jace's mind, someone with power and messing with his memories and dreams, making him do things he doesn't want to do.
Hypnomancy, said one of the Silent Brothers. The magic of dreams. That is the province of only the greatest and most powerful users of magic.
Like angels, said Clary, and she was rewarded by a stiff, surprised silence.
Perhaps, said Brother Zachariah finally, you should come with us to the Speaking Stars.
This was not an invitation, clearly, but an order, for they turned immediately and began walking into the heart of the city, not waiting to see if Jace and Clary followed. They reached the Pavilion of the Speaking Stars, where the brothers took their places behind their black basalt table. The mortal sword was back in its place, gleaming on the wall behind them like the wing of a silver bird. Jace moved to the center of the room and stared down at the pattern of metallic stars burned into the red and gold tiles of the floor. Clary watched him, feeling her heart ache. It was hard to see him like this, all his usual burning energy gone, like witchlight suffocating under a covering of ash. He raised his blonde head then, blinking, and Clary knew that the Silent Brothers were speaking inside his mind, saying words she couldn't hear. She saw him shake his head and heard him say, I don't know. I thought they weren't anything but ordinary dreams. His mouth tightened then, and she couldn't help wondering what they were asking him.
Visions?
I don't think so. Yes, I did encounter the angel, but it's Clary who had the prophetic dreams, not me. Clary tensed. They were getting awfully close to asking about what had happened with Jace and the angel that night by Lake Lynn. She hadn't thought about that. When the Silent Brothers pried into your mind, just what did they see? Only what they were looking for? Or everything? Jace nodded then. Fine. I'm ready if you are. He closed his eyes, and Clary, watching, relaxed slightly. This must have been what it had been like for Jace to watch her, she thought, the first time the Silent Brothers had delved into her mind. She saw details she hadn't noticed then, for she had been caught inside the nets of their minds and her own, reeling back into her memories, lost to the world. She saw Jace stiffen all over, as if they had touched him with their hands. His head went back, his hands at his sides opened and closed,
as the stars on the floor at his feet flared up with a blinding silver light. She blinked away tears from the brightness. He was a graceful dark outline against a sheet of blinding silver, as if he stood in the heart of a waterfall. All around them was noise, a soft, incomprehensible whispering. As she watched, he went to his knees, his hands braced against the ground. Her heart tightened. Having the Silent Brothers in her head had nearly made her faint. But Jace was stronger than that, wasn't he? Slowly he doubled in on himself, hands gripped against his stomach, agony in every line of him, though he never cried out. Clary could take it no longer. She darted toward him, through the sheets of light, and went on her knees next to him, throwing her arms around his body. The whispering voices around her rose to a storm of protest as he turned his head and looked at her. The silver light had washed out his eyes, and they looked flat and as white as marble tiles. His lips shaped her name. And then it was gone. The light, the sound, all of it. And they knelt together on the bare floor of the pavilion, silence and shadow all around them. Jace was shaking. When his hands released each other, she saw that they were bloody where his nails had torn the skin. Still holding him by the arm, she looked up at the Silent Brothers, fighting back her anger. She knew it was like being furious at a doctor who had to administer a painful but life-saving treatment. But it was hard, so hard, to be reasonable when it was someone that you loved. "There is something you have not told us, Clarissa Morgenstern," said Brother Zachariah. "A secret you both have been keeping." An icy hand closed around Clary's heart. "What do you mean?" "The mark of death is on this boy." It was another of the brothers speaking. Enoch, she thought. "Death?" said Jace. "Do you mean I'm going to die?" He didn't sound surprised. "We mean that you were dead. You had passed beyond the portal into the shadow realms, your soul untethered from your body." Clary and Jace exchanged a look. She swallowed. "The angel Raziel," she began. "Yes, his mark is all over the boy as well." Enoch's voice was without emotion. "There are only two ways to bring back the dead. The way of necromancy, the black sorcery of bell, book, and candle. That will return a semblance of life. But only an angel of God's own right hand could place a human soul back into their body as easily as life was breathed into the first of men." He shook his head. "The balance of life and death, of good and evil, is a delicate one, young shadow hunters. You have upset it."
"But Raziel's the angel," said Clary. "He can do whatever he wants. You worship him, don't you? If he chose to do this..."
"Did he?" asked another of the brothers. "Did he choose?"
Clary looked at Jace. She thought, "I could have asked for anything else in the universe. World peace, a cure to disease, to live forever. But all I wanted was you."
"We know the ritual of the instruments," said Zachariah. "We know that he who possesses them all, who is their lord, may request of the angel one thing. I do not think he could have refused you."
Clary set her chin. "Well," she said, "it's done now." Jace gave the ghost of a laugh. "They could always kill me, you know," he said. "Bring things back into balance." Her hands tightened on his arm.
"Don't be ridiculous."
But her voice was thin. She tensed further as Brother Zachariah broke away from the tight group of Silent Brothers and approached them, his feet gliding silently over the speaking stars. He reached Jace, and Clary had to fight the urge to push him away as he bent down and placed his long fingers under Jace's chin, raising the boy's face to his. Zechariah's fingers were slim, unlined,
a young man's fingers. She had never given much thought to the ages of the Silent Brothers before, assuming them to be all some species of wizened and old. Jace, kneeling, gazed up at Zachariah, who looked down at him with his blind, impassive expression. Clary could not help but think of medieval paintings of saints on their knees, gazing upward, their faces suffused with shining golden light.
"Would that I had been here," he said, his voice unexpectedly gentle, "when you were growing up. I would have seen the truth in your face, Jace Lightwood, and known who you were."
Jace looked puzzled, but didn't move to pull away. Zachariah turned to the others.
"We cannot and should not harm the boy. Old ties exist between the Herondales and the brothers. We owe him help."
"Help with what?" Clary demanded. "Can you see something wrong with him? Something inside his head?"
"When a shadow hunter is born, a ritual is performed, a number of protective spells placed upon the child by both the Silent Brothers and the Iron Sisters."
The Iron Sisters, Clary knew from her studies, were the sister sect of the Silent Brothers. Even more retiring than their brethren, they were in charge of crafting Shadow Hunter weapons. Brother Zachariah went on,
"When Jace died and then was raised, he was born a second time, with those protections and rituals stripped away. It would have left him as open as an unlocked door, open to any kind of demonic influence or malevolence."
Clary licked her dry lips. "Possession, you mean?"
"Not possession. Influence. I suspect that a powerful demonic power whispers into your ears, Jonathan Herondale. You are strong. You fight it. But it wears you down as the sea wears down the sand."
"Jace," he whispered through white lips. "Jace Lightwood. Not Herondale." Clary, clinging to practicalities, said,
"How can you be sure it's a demon?
And what can we do to get it to leave him alone?" Enoch, sounding thoughtful, said,
"The ritual must be performed again, the protections laid upon him a second time, as if he had just been born."
"Can you do it?" Clary asked. Zachariah inclined his head.
"It can be done. The preparations must be made, one of the Iron Sisters called on, an amulet crafted."
He trailed off.
"Jonathan must remain with us until the ritual is finished. This is the safest place for him."
Clary looked at Jace again, searching for an expression, any expression, of hope, relief, delight, anything. But his face was impassive. "For how long?" he said. Zachariah spread his thin hands wide.
"A day, perhaps two. The ritual is meant for infants. We will have to change it, alter it to fit an adult. If he were older than 18, it would be impossible. As it is, it will be difficult, but he is not beyond saving." Not beyond saving.
It was not what Clary had hoped for. She had wanted to be told that the problem was simple, easily solved. She looked at Jace. His head was bowed, his hair falling forward. The back of his neck looked so vulnerable to her, it made her heart ache.
"It's fine," she said softly. "I'll stay here with you."
"No." The brothers spoke as a group, their voices inexorable.
"He must remain here alone, for what we must do he cannot afford to be distracted."
She felt Jace's body tighten. The last time he had been alone in the Silent City, he had been unfairly imprisoned, present for the horrible deaths of most of the Silent Brothers, and tormented by Valentine. She could not imagine that the idea of another night alone in the city would be anything but awful for him.
"Jace," she whispered, "I'll do whatever you want me to do. If you want to go..."
"I'll stay," he said. He had raised his head, and his voice was strong and clear. "I'll stay. I'll do whatever I have to do to fix this. I just need you to call Izzy and Alec. Tell them I'm staying at Simon's to keep an eye on him. Tell them I'll see them tomorrow or the next day."
"But..." "Clary..." Gently, he took both her hands and held them between his. "You are right. This isn't coming from inside me. Something is doing this to me. To us. You know what that means? If I can be... cured, then I don't have to be afraid of myself when I'm around you anymore. I'd spend 1,000 nights in the Silent City for that."
She leaned forward, heedless of the presence of the Silent Brothers, and kissed him, a quick press of her lips against his.
"I'll be back," she whispered. "Tomorrow night, after the Ironworks party, I'll come back and see you."
The hopefulness in his eyes was enough to break her heart. "Maybe I'll be cured by then." She touched his face with her fingertips.
"Maybe you will be."
Simon woke, still feeling exhausted after a long night of bad dreams. He rolled onto his back and stared at the lights coming in the single window in his bedroom. He couldn't help but wonder if he'd sleep better if he did what other vampires did and slept during the day. Despite the fact that the sun didn't harm him, he could feel the pull of the nights, the desire to be out under the dark sky and the glimmering stars. There was something in him that wanted to live in shadows, that felt the sunlight like a thin knife-like pain, just like there was something in him that wanted blood. And look how fighting that had turned out for him. He staggered upright and threw on some clothes, then made his way out into the living room. The place smelled like toast and coffee. Jordan was sitting on one of the counter stools, his hair sticking out every which way, as usual, his shoulders hunched.
"Hey," Simon said. "What's up?"
Jordan looked over at him. He was pale under his tan.
"We have a problem," he said.
Simon blinked. He hadn't seen his werewolf roommate since the day before. He'd come home from the Institute last night and collapsed in exhaustion. Jordan hadn't been here, and Simon had figured he was out working, but maybe something had happened.
"What's wrong?"
"This was shoved under our door." Jordan pushed a folded newspaper towards Simon. It was the New York Morning Chronicle, folded open to one of the pages. There was a grisly picture toward the top, a grainy image of a body sprawled out on some pavement, stick skinny limbs bent at odd angles. It hardly looked human, the way dead bodies sometimes didn't. Simon was about to ask Jordan why he had to look at this, when the text under the photo jumped out at him. "Girl found dead." Police say they are pursuing leads in the death of 14-year-old Maureen Brown, whose body was discovered Sunday night at 11 p.m. stuffed into a trash can outside the Big Apple Deli on 3rd Avenue. Though no official cause of death has been released by the coroner's office, the deli owner who found the body, Michael Garza, says her throat was cut open. Police have not yet located a weapon. Unable to read on, Simon sat down heavily in a chair. Now that he knew, the photo was unmistakably Maureen. He recognized her rainbow arm warmers, the stupid pink hat she'd been wearing when he'd seen her last.
"My God," he wanted to say. "Oh, God."
But no words came out.
"Didn't that note say," Jordan said in a bleak voice, "that if you didn't go to that address, they cut your girlfriend's throat?"
"No," Simon whispered.
"It's not possible, no."
But he remembered.
"Eric's little cousin's friend, what's the name? The one who has a crush on Simon. She comes to all her gigs and tells everyone she's his girlfriend."
Simon remembered her phone, a little pink phone with the stickers on it, the way she'd held it up to take a photo of them. The feeling of her hand on his shoulder, as light as a butterfly. 14 years old. He curled in on himself, wrapping his arms around his chest as if he could make himself small enough to vanish completely. Chapter 14. What Dreams May Come. Jace tossed uneasily on the narrow bed in the Silent City. He didn't know where the brothers slept, and they didn't seem inclined to reveal it.